The Blind Owl stands as one of the most enigmatic and psychologically complex works of world literature, a novel that has achieved cult status since its secretive publication in 1936. When Sadegh Hidayat first released his masterpiece, he mimeographed just 50 handwritten copies in Bombay, distributing them only to close friends with instructions not to circulate them in Iran. The book was officially banned in his homeland until after the exile of Reza Shah in 1941. Its reputation for inducing depression and suicide became so widespread that some Iranian parents would hide the book from their children. Despite, or perhaps because of, this notoriety, The Blind Owl has influenced generations of writers and thinkers, with figures like Salman Rushdie citing its profound impact. The novel's hypnotic, dreamlike narrative style pioneered modernist techniques in Persian literature decades before similar experimentation became commonplace in Western fiction, making Hidayat a literary revolutionary whose shadow looms large over contemporary Iranian culture. The narrative of The Blind Owl unfolds through the fevered consciousness of an unnamed narrator, a pen case painter who decorates objects with a single, obsessive image, a cypress tree beneath which a hunched old man sits, offering a young woman a lily flower. This recurring motif becomes the first clue to the narrator's fractured psyche, appearing not just in his art, but in his hallucinations, dreams, and memories, suggesting a mind trapped in compulsive repetition. From the opening lines, we're plunged into his disturbed inner world. In life, there are wounds that, like leprosy, silently scrape at and consume the soul in solitude. The narrator exists in profound isolation, believing himself fundamentally different from the rabble around him, ordinary people whom he views with contempt for their simple pleasures and conventional lives. His disdain manifests in bitter observations about their routines, their marriages, their religious practices, all of which he sees as meaningless rituals masking an empty existence. This isolation isn't merely circumstantial, but existential. The narrator sees himself as possessing a kind of terrible knowledge or awareness that separates him from humanity, a cursed enlightenment that makes ordinary life impossible. "I write only for my shadow," he confesses, suggesting that his words are meant not for communication, but as a form of exorcism, a desperate attempt to purge himself of tormenting thoughts. His alienation manifests physically. He describes himself as sickly, pale, with yellow, sunken cheeks and eyes that have retreated into their sockets. This physical deterioration mirrors his psychological disintegration, creating a portrait of a man whose inner decay has begun to consume his outer form. He develops peculiar habits, avoiding mirrors, speaking to shadows, and measuring time not by clocks, but by the intensity of his suffering. The structure of the narrative itself embodies fragmentation, employing a sophisticated technique of narrative dissolution. Events repeat with variations, like dark echoes of themselves, each iteration slightly more distorted than the last. Chronology becomes confused, with past and present bleeding into each other, and reality blends seamlessly with hallucination. Time loses its linear quality as the narrator slips between past and present, between waking life and opium-induced dreams, creating a labyrinthine narrative where cause and effect become impossible to distinguish. What emerges is not a traditional story, but a psychological portrait of a mind coming undone. A mind haunted by obsessive images, paranoid thoughts, and an increasing inability to distinguish between what is real and what is imagined. This fragmentation becomes the novel's central metaphor for modern existence, the self splintered into irreconcilable pieces, unable to form a coherent whole. The narrator's descent into madness mirrors broader themes of alienation in modern society, where the individual consciousness becomes increasingly isolated from both community and reality itself. At the heart of the narrator's obsession lies the image of an ethereal woman with two large, slanting black eyes that seem to draw him into another world. This woman first appears to him through a small window in his room as he lies sick with fever. The encounter is brief but transformative. She offers him a blue morning glory, Nilufare Kabud, before disappearing, leaving him forever changed. This mysterious woman becomes the embodiment of unattainable beauty and transcendence, a figure both desired and feared. The narrator's relationship to this woman, who later appears as his wife, though possibly only in his delusions, reveals the novel's complex exploration of desire. His longing for her is not merely sexual, but metaphysical. She represents something beyond ordinary existence, a kind of purity that he both worships and wishes to possess. Yet this desire proves destructive. When the woman, who may be his wife, appears in physical form, he finds himself repulsed by her sexuality and her connection to the material world. Her body gave off a smell like that of a bitch in heat, he writes, revealing his Madonna whore complex in stark terms. The narrator's inability to reconcile his idealized vision of woman with flesh and blood reality leads to violence. In one of the novel's most disturbing sequences, he describes cutting up the woman's body and placing it in a suitcase, an act that may be literal murder or a metaphor for his psychological dismemberment of the feminine ideal. Either way, the pattern is clear. Desire leads not to fulfillment, but to destruction. The woman's eyes continue to haunt him even after her apparent death, suggesting that the object of obsession can never truly be possessed or destroyed. This treatment of desire connects to broader themes of Iranian cultural identity. The ethereal woman embodies elements of pre-Islamic Persian mythology, particularly the goddess Anahita, while the narrator's conflicted relationship with her reflects the tension between Iran's ancient heritage and its Islamic present. Hedayat, known for his fascination with pre-Islamic Persian culture, uses this relationship to explore not just personal psychology, but cultural schizophrenia. One of the most disorienting aspects of The Blind Owl is its masterful use of doubling, a literary device that permeates every layer of the narrative. Characters appear in multiple guises throughout the text. Seemingly separate individuals reveal themselves to be aspects of the same person, and the narrator himself splits into observer and observed. This doubling creates a hall of mirrors effect, where identity becomes fluid and unstable, reflecting the fragmented nature of modern consciousness. The most significant double is the old peddler who appears at the narrator's door, a hunched figure with a mocking laugh who seems to know the narrator's innermost thoughts and darkest secrets. This figure recurs throughout the novel in various incarnations, as the old man in the narrator's paintings, as a gravedigger, as a butcher, and ultimately as the narrator himself. Each manifestation carries subtle variations while maintaining essential characteristics. The knowing laugh, the penetrating gaze, the air of ancient wisdom tinged with malice. I have become exactly like the old man, the narrator realizes with horror near the novel's end, describing how his hair has turned white and his face transformed. This doubling suggests not just psychological splitting, but a kind of terrible inheritance, the narrator becoming what he most fears, as if fulfilling an inescapable destiny. The doubling extends to the novel's intricate structure, which is divided into two parts that mirror and distort each other like fractured reflections. Events from the first section reappear in the second with crucial differences. A scene of love becomes one of death. A moment of revelation transforms into one of delusion, and characters shift their roles and relationships. This creates a sense that we're seeing the same story from different angles or different levels of consciousness, much like the varying perspectives one might encounter in a fever dream. This technique anticipates postmodern fiction by decades, creating a narrative that folds in on itself like a Möbius strip, where beginning and end become indistinguishable. The doppelganger motif connects deeply to ancient Persian dualistic philosophy, particularly Zoroastrianism, with its emphasis on the cosmic struggle between light and darkness, good and evil, order and chaos. The narrator exists in a liminal space between these forces, unable to fully inhabit either realm, a state that manifests in his physical environment, his relationships, and his art. "I belonged neither to the earth nor to the heavens," he laments, capturing the essential condition of the divided self. This liminality extends to his cultural identity as well. He feels alienated from both traditional Persian culture and the modernizing influences of the West, existing in a painful in-between state that offers no resolution. His paintings, featuring identical scenes repeated endlessly, become both a symptom of and metaphor for this splitting of consciousness. The novel's use of doubles also serves to blur the line between reality and imagination, sanity and madness, life and death. Each double carries traces of the original while introducing elements of distortion, creating an uncanny effect that destabilizes the reader's grip on the narrative's reality. This technique reflects the modernist preoccupation with fragmented identity, while drawing on traditional Persian literary motifs of mirrors, reflections, and dual natures. Death permeates every aspect of The Blind Owl. The narrator lives in a world of corpses, graves, and decomposition. His room is described as like a grave, and he frequently compares himself to a corpse. Even the landscape reflects this preoccupation. The city is filled with narrow, winding streets like the intestines of a corpse, and beyond lies a wasteland of ancient graves and crumbling towers. The novel's most striking death imagery centers around the mysterious woman. After her apparent death, the narrator becomes obsessed with preserving her eyes, which he believes contain her essence. He removes them and places them in an alcohol-filled inkwell on his shelf, where they continue to stare at him accusingly. This grotesque image encapsulates the novel's treatment of death not as an ending, but as a persistent presence. The dead continue to watch the living, to judge them, to haunt them. Decay follows death in relentless detail. The narrator describes worms crawling on flesh, the stench of decomposition, and the transformation of living tissue into yellow, putrid liquid. These descriptions serve not merely to shock, but to emphasize the materiality of existence, the inescapable fact that all flesh returns to dust. Yet paradoxically, this decay never leads to true obliteration. Instead, it creates transformation, as when the narrator notices that the woman's corpse has been replaced by a morning glory plant growing from the spot where she was buried. This treatment of death connects to Zoroastrian funeral practices, which traditionally exposed corpses on towers of silence to be consumed by vultures rather than contaminating the earth through burial. Hedayat, deeply interested in pre-Islamic Persian traditions, uses these associations to create a death imagery that feels both ancient and modernist. The result is a meditation on mortality that rejects both religious consolation and materialist finality, instead presenting death as a state of continued consciousness and suffering, a kind of purgatory from which there is no escape. Throughout The Blind Owl, the narrator exists in states of altered consciousness induced by opium, fever, and possibly madness. These altered states blur the boundaries between reality and hallucination, creating a narrative landscape where nothing can be trusted. "Was I asleep or awake?" the narrator repeatedly asks, unable to distinguish between these states. This uncertainty permeates every scene, with even seemingly mundane moments taking on a dreamlike quality that leaves both narrator and reader questioning the nature of experience itself. Opium serves multiple functions in the novel, operating as both narrative device and metaphor for the human condition. It provides temporary escape from the narrator's psychological torment, offering brief moments of peace. "Only in the thick opium smoke could I find relief," he confesses, describing how the drug creates a protective veil between himself and unbearable reality. Yet this relief comes at a terrible price. Each return to sobriety brings heightened suffering and further disconnection from reality. The drug becomes both medicine and poison, relief and torment. mirroring the duality present throughout Persian mystical tradition. The narrator's increasing dependence on opium parallels his descent into isolation, with each dose simultaneously dulling his pain and deepening his alienation from the world. The drug becomes both medicine and poison, relief and torment, mirroring the duality present throughout Persian mystical tradition. The narrator's increasing dependence on opium parallels his descent into isolation, with each dose simultaneously dulling his pain and deepening his alienation from the world. The opium-induced visions create some of the novel's most striking imagery, blending personal trauma with cultural symbolism. In one sequence, the narrator describes seeing a row of hanged men with their long, tangled hair swinging from gallows while black, hungry crows peck at their eyes. These hallucinations often incorporate elements of Persian mythology and Islamic eschatology, suggesting that the narrator's personal hell draws on collective cultural nightmares. The visions frequently feature recurring motifs: ethereal women with piercing eyes, decrepit old men, serpents, and shadows that take human form, each loaded with psychological and cultural significance. Hedayat's detailed descriptions of altered consciousness anticipate later psychedelic literature by decades, displaying remarkable insight into how drugs affect perception and consciousness. His exploration of how substances transform perception connects to ancient Persian mystical traditions, particularly Sufism, which sometimes used intoxicants as a path to spiritual insight. The narrator's experiences echo the accounts of medieval Persian mystics who sought divine truth through altered states. Yet, unlike traditional mystical narratives, the narrator's altered states lead not to transcendence, but to deeper entrapment in his own psyche, each vision reinforcing his isolation rather than connecting him to something greater. The opium dreams become a dark mirror of mystical experience, promising enlightenment, but delivering only deeper confusion. The novel's treatment of consciousness raises profound questions about the nature of reality itself. If perception is so easily distorted, what can we trust? The narrator's unreliability becomes a philosophical statement about the impossibility of objective truth. "Perhaps all these things existed only in my imagination," he concedes at one point, suggesting that the entire narrative might be a fever dream or opium hallucination, a possibility that the novel never resolves. This ambiguity extends beyond the narrator's personal experience to challenge fundamental assumptions about reality, memory, and identity. The text suggests that all human experience might be as unreliable as an opium dream, with our perceived reality being merely another form of hallucination. While The Blind Owl operates primarily on psychological and existential levels, it also serves as a powerful meditation on Iranian cultural identity in the early 20th century. Written during Reza Shah's aggressive modernization program, 1925 to 1941, the novel captures the disorientation of a society caught between ancient traditions and Western influences. This period saw rapid industrialization, mandatory Western dress codes, and the suppression of traditional customs, creating profound social upheaval that resonates throughout the text. This cultural tension appears most clearly in the novel's setting, which shifts between an ancient, mythic landscape and a more contemporary urban environment. The narrator moves between these worlds, belonging fully to neither, a displacement reflecting the broader Iranian experience of modernity. In the ancient setting, he encounters figures from Persian mythology and pre-Islamic traditions, wine sellers who echo Khayyam's poetry, ethereal women reminiscent of miniature paintings, and mysterious old men who seem to step directly from Ferdowsi's Shahnameh. In the modern setting, he confronts the alienation of urban life and the emptiness of conventional social roles, depicted through crowded bazaars, claustrophobic apartments, and meaningless social rituals. Hidayat himself was deeply invested in pre-Islamic Persian culture, learning ancient Pahlavi language and studying Zoroastrian texts during his time in Paris and Bombay. This interest appears throughout the novel in its imagery, references, and philosophical concerns. The recurring cypress tree in the narrator's paintings holds sacred significance in Zoroastrian tradition as a symbol of eternal life, its upward reach representing the soul's journey toward enlightenment. Similarly, the morning glory flower, Niloufar, connects to ancient Persian goddess worship, particularly the cult of Anahita, goddess of water and fertility. These symbols create a complex tapestry of cultural memory that haunts the narrative. Yet these ancient elements exist in tension with Islamic imagery and modern concerns. The novel's setting in Ray, ancient Raga, now part of Tehran, emphasizes this layering of historical periods, a once great city of the Persian Empire now reduced to scattered ruins and crumbling towers. This landscape becomes a metaphor for cultural trauma, for the sense of loss and fragmentation that characterized Iranian intellectual life in Hidayat's time. The novel's frequent references to opium addiction, colonial influence, and social decay further underscore this cultural crisis. The narrator's alienation from the rabble reflects Hidayat's own position as a Western-educated intellectual returning to a society he found both familiar and foreign. Like many modernist writers worldwide, from James Joyce to Lu Xun, Hidayat explored the condition of being caught between worlds, belonging nowhere, haunted by a past that cannot be recovered and a present that offers no comfort. This cultural dislocation becomes inseparable from the psychological fragmentation at the novel's core, creating a work that speaks simultaneously to personal trauma and national identity crisis. The novel's circular structure itself mirrors this trap of history, an endless cycle of remembering and forgetting, tradition and modernity, belonging and exile. The Blind Owl revolutionized Persian literature through its radical narrative structure and distinctive prose style. Abandoning conventional storytelling, Hidayat created a labyrinthine text that mirrors the narrator's psychological state, circling back on itself, repeating with variations, and deliberately disorienting the reader. The novel's two-part structure creates a dizzying effect of déjà vu. The second part retells elements of the first, but with crucial differences, suggesting either alternative versions of the same events or different levels of reality. Characters reappear in new guises, locations transform, and time becomes elastic. This structure has been compared to a spiral or a Möbius strip, forms that appear to progress but actually return to their starting point. Hidayat's prose style is equally innovative. In the original Persian, he uses unusually long sentences connected by dashes rather than conventional punctuation, creating a breathless, urgent quality that conveys the narrator's disturbed mental state. The rhythm of the prose shifts between hypnotic repetition and jarring interruption, never allowing the reader to settle into comfortable reading patterns. The novel's imagery creates a consistent atmosphere of nightmare and hallucination. Recurring motifs, the cypress tree, the morning glory flower, staring eyes, the old man's mocking laugh, form a symbolic vocabulary that gains power through repetition. These images operate like musical themes, appearing in different contexts, but always carrying their accumulated associations. Perhaps most striking is the novel's use of unreliable narration. The narrator repeatedly contradicts himself, admits to confusion, and questions his own perceptions. "Perhaps I am making a mistake," he acknowledges at one point, undermining everything he has previously described. This technique forces readers to become active participants in constructing meaning, sifting through contradictory information to form their own interpretations. This narrative complexity places The Blind Owl firmly within the modernist tradition internationally, alongside works like James Joyce's Ulysses and William Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury. Yet Hidayat was working largely in isolation from these Western movements, developing his experimental techniques independently, a testament to his genius and to the universal impulse toward literary innovation in the early 20th century. Since its publication, The Blind Owl has generated countless interpretations, becoming one of the most analyzed works in Persian literature. Critics have approached it through various lenses: psychoanalytic, political, mystical, autobiographical, and more. This interpretive richness speaks to the novel's deliberate ambiguity and symbolic density. Psychoanalytic readings focus on the narrator's Oedipal conflicts, his Madonna whore complex regarding women, and his apparent psychosexual development issues. The recurring image of eyes being pecked out by birds connects to castration anxiety in Freudian terms, while the narrator's relationship with the old peddler suggests a troubled father complex. These readings gained particular currency in the mid-20th century, but continue to influence understanding of the novel's psychological dimensions. Political interpretations view the work as an allegory for Iran under Reza Shah's authoritarian modernization. The narrator's alienation represents the condition of intellectuals under political repression, while the rabble he despises symbolizes those who conform to the regime. Hedayat's own political views, he was associated with the Marxist Tudeh Party later in life, lend credence to such readings, though the novel transcends simple political allegory. Mystical interpretations connect the text to Sufi traditions in Persian literature, seeing the narrator's journey as a distorted version of the mystical quest for union with the divine. The ethereal woman represents the divine beloved of Sufi poetry, while the narrator's suffering becomes a dark version of the spiritual trials described in works like Attar's Conference of the Birds. This approach highlights the novel's connection to Persian literary tradition, even as it subverts that tradition. Autobiographical readings emphasize parallels between the narrator and Hedayat himself, both isolated intellectuals, both obsessed with death, both caught between East and West. Hedayat's eventual suicide in Paris in 1951 has led many to read the novel as a prolonged suicide note, though this oversimplifies both the work and its author's complex life. What unites these diverse interpretations is recognition of the novel's fundamental ambiguity. The Blind Owl resists definitive reading, functioning instead as what Umberto Eco would call an open work, a text that deliberately invites multiple interpretations without privileging any single one. This openness ensures the novel's continuing relevance across cultures and generations, allowing each reader to discover their own meaning in its labyrinthine passages. Nearly a century after its creation, The Blind Owl continues to exert its hypnotic power. Its influence extends beyond literature into film, visual art, music, and popular culture. Contemporary Iranian writers still work in its shadow, while international readers discover in its pages a universal exploration of consciousness, identity, and existence. The Owl's gaze remains fixed upon us, challenging us to confront the darkness within ourselves and within human experience itself.